Dissolution by Stefan Molyneux, Chapter 12. The shadows on the wall looked like giant spiders, lengthy and foggy and reaching. The multicolored nightlight spun reds and yellows across her face. The gliding rocking chair went back and forth. The squirming continued in her lap, and Helen felt that she was losing her mind. Months ago, she had hurled the digital clock out into the hallway, enraged by its endless scrolling, time marking every single second of her isolation and exhaustion. Her heart was a boulder, hard and mossy and crawling with insects. The life that had come from her reached and kneaded and gurgled and shat and drooled and stuck out its tongue and tried to smile, and she gave it polite attention, to be sure, but it was all a form of cocktail eyes when she was at a party and approached by a crusty and incomprehensibly confident man and signaled her boredom by gazing around the room, her face glazed over with blank indifference. Go away, go away, go away. But her baby would not go away. Her baby was relentless, invasive, all-consuming, selfish. Of course the thought was mad, he's just a baby. But Helen chose not to drive it away. The alternative to being offended by her new life was a passageway that led down into darkness, to dungeons, to hell itself. Probably it didn't really matter. That way, madness lies. The first step turns into an endless chute, and I slide forever. Helen's mother, Sharon, did come over from time to time, but there was a strange jealousy. She'd always been jealous of Helen's beauty. But now she envied its fruits, Robert's wealth and looks and status. Sharon was brisk and efficient and taught her baby management, wipe, swaddle, burp, and feed, but took no delight in the child. This was not an infection for Helen. After the pain and, well, rage at birth, she held her newborn son in her hand and she was angry at Robert, of course, because he showed up and squeezed her hips and wiped her forehead, but he fell asleep 4 hours in, and she saw him hunched over in a ratty armchair, sad spiderweb drool hanging from his mouth, and she felt repelled by him. If I wake him, he will need some goddamn thing or another, she thought savagely, squeezing her eyes shut. He wanted the baby, pressured me like hell to have it. Now he snoozes and drools while the baby elbows its way out of me like some marble-eyed space alien. Robert was awake when his son was born. He repeatedly refused to cut the umbilical cord, and she was too tired to argue with him. They took the baby, weighed and tested him, then wrapped him up and handed him over. The tiny, scrunched face, the malign lips stretched over red-ridged gums, the squirming, the loss of comfort, the reedy screeching. We've both been kicked out of the womb, kid, thought Helen. Or rather, the thought had Helen, since it arose within her like sudden vomiting. And Helen smiled and cooed, of course, and made all the gestures, but felt like a bad actor, self-conscious and sweaty. It was like she was pushing and pulling levers and pulleys in her mind, moving facial muscles and making throat sounds that approximated happy motherhood, while all the time wondering if she was about to get fired by the director. And she'd heard of postpartum depression. But that was nonsense for her, of course. What is the point of all this shapeliness if I don't like motherhood? It would be like inheriting $1 billion and being a basement-dwelling hoarder. And so she waited. Sometimes she felt boredom with, or hatred of, Robert. But she had learned to outwait her various devils. The light would hit him a certain way, or he would be sleeping attractively, or made a joke that triggered a belly laugh, and all would be well in her heart. Clouds were not forever. Dawn followed night. Storms gave way to sunshine, blah, blah, blah. So she mime cooed and stroked her son's face and breastfed and waited. Helen remembered a time when she was a little girl, maybe 7 or 8. She had demanded to ride the bus on her own, and on coming back, she had gotten off 2 stops early. Clutching her little polka dot purse, she had waited and waited, having to pee fiercely. 2 buses passed by, heading somewhere else, not stopping. 2 men offered her a ride, one in a white van, one in a purple convertible. She shook her head, afraid to speak. Even then, men liked her. Eventually, as the dark gathered above her, she walked, hoping against hope to get to anything familiar. She knew what houses and cars and lampposts and streets and trees were, of course, but none of them clicked into any recognition, into any friendly neighborhood comfort patterns. When she finally made it home, she fled to the bathroom and then collapsed on the dusty sofa. "You silly thing," cried her mother on hearing the story. "That was the last bus." Helen was angry then, as well, that her mother had sent her out on such an edge-case journey. She never knew how long she had waited. All she knew is that the bus never came. And as a new mother, she waited and waited for her love to come. She tried. No one could say that she didn't. She listened to sentimental Christa Berg and Paul Young songs. She read The Giving Tree in a soft voice, trying to wake her inert, lumpen heart. She watched her son sleep and only saw him gathering his strength to invade her and draw more resources. She knew he was not there to feed her, but God damn it, was it so impossible to ask him to respond in some manner? His dark eyes scanned and searched and rarely blinked. Perfect little orbs of scathing indifference. And Helen read with dread all the possible neurological problems her baby might have, but the little shit! He opened up his beady little heart to Robert, who poked and twirled him and strengthened his legs by helping him push against his hands when he lay on the floor. When Robert stuck out his tongue, Justin reciprocated. When Helen did the same, her baby just stared. "All the rejection I heaped on men is returning to me in a surly 10-pound pink bomb," Helen thought, not hysterically, but with depressed karmic calculation. Her best friend as a little girl used to make Helen giggle endlessly by randomly picking out things that were judging them. "That cat is just sitting there judging," she would cry while they were eating snickerdoodle cookies. Half her mother's food had ridiculous names: Bumbleberry, Bobble and Squeak, Monkey Bread, Toad in the Hole. Or on seeing a slanted tree, "That tree is leaning over, judging." Owls judged, elephants especially. Not giraffes, though. They were just too goofy. And now, Justin judges, thought Helen. "He gurgles and pulls at my hair and smiles at my husband and drains me dry and doesn't care about my beauty one bit and judges me as wanting because I have coasted on sex appeal my entire adult life. And slightly before, let's be honest." And tears would flow in the slow rocking, endlessly squirming rainbow room. But they were like rivulets lunging down a glass of cold water. They had no emotional impact. They solved nothing, released nothing. It was indifferent rain that only brought more clouds. She remembered an old song, "The Sky is Crying," and remembered thinking what a cheesy analogy it was. Clouds are not sad, only crops are thirsty. So Helen leaked milk and tears, but kept her secrets sealed up. The shame and isolation was profound, and Helen realized that there was no one who could help her. In between manic bouts of invasive play, Robert mostly complained about parenthood. Gained a son, lost a wife, he would grin, teetering between humor and bitterness. He was impatient with her. Geez, let me stay home all day playing with a baby rather than go blind redlining endless contracts. See how much I complain. And Helen did not fight back, did not complain. She felt like a window complaining about the view. She grew to hate the small house, the inherited drapes, the dark wood kitchen cabinets, the mismatched plates and cups, the mystery implements in the drawers donated by her mother in case she ever wanted to mash potatoes slightly more conveniently. It was all a pretty prison. Even a hotel suite could be lovely, until the moment that it was locked from the outside. And the days just crawled on and on, like a lost desert soul refusing to die of thirst. Helen had to will herself to stop staring at the clock. She stowed away her watch and wedding ring from frustration and resentment, respectively. It was her and the baby, feeding, cleaning, trying indifferent patty cake games and reading fairy tales with no intonation for any of the characters. The giant droned fee-fi-fo-fum, as if murmuring through a yawn. And the wolf threatened Little Red Riding Hood as if he were whispering complaints in a quiet theater. Everyone was the same. Everyone droned. And Helen checked off her mental lists mechanically. Fed food. Read book. Changed diaper. She turned on the TV when she felt the darkness closing in, and Justin stared, goggle-eyed at the random, jumpy cartoons. He loved the singing frog song, and Helen learned it by heart and would sing it over and over in a dead jazz whisper as Justin stared at her. Stared and judged.
When is Daddy coming home so I can come alive?
Soon, kiddo. The robot minder is almost out of power. And Helen knew that Robert would be hungry and tired and annoyed at the drive, and that she should have an apron and a hot meal and a contented baby and be out of her sweatpants. But it felt like lifting a giant tree trunk off numb and broken legs. Impossible. The only thing to do was lay back, stare at the webs of tree branches dissecting the sky, and wait for help or death. And Robert was drained by work, and Helen was drained by motherhood. And they scratched at each other in frustration. Two starving souls squaring off over a plate of plastic fruit. And Helen knew that Robert was good with Justin in part to show her how easy it was, and that angered her. But the anger turned into a leaden weight in her heart and sweated its useless tears in the darkness. And Helen could not turn to other women. Her mother, having transferred her management skills, came by less and less, and mostly complained about her dad anyway, because other women always viewed Helen's beauty as a threat and thought her life was perfect and Robert so handsome that she found herself sealed off by female paranoia and envy. Yeah, like I would ever go for your slob husbands with their ringed armpit t-shirts and black socks and sandals. And the men kept their distance, sensing their wives' fears. And the neighborhood was mostly empty during the day anyway. The toddlers went to daycare, the moms and dads went to work, and evenings were for baths and food and fighting about TV time. Maybe kids roamed a little, an hour or two, in the summer on Sunday afternoons, but the daycare kids were so wild that Helen was afraid to take Justin out. And the moms glared at her, and the dads averted their eyes, and she was shut up in the glass castle of her own looks. And even her body had bounced back after birth with little effort. Sure, she breastfed Justin more than was technically necessary and did leg lifts while watching Dora, but her hourglass figure seemed to take less than an hour to return. This further annoyed and alienated the wives, of course. Helen cocked her head as she heard movement from down the hall. She waited for the inevitable groan and gasp that signaled her husband had awoken. He took forever to get up, which used to annoy her no end, since she had to leap up to take care of a screaming baby. He lingered on the toilet, had to take endless girly baths because his skin was just so dry, and it was easier to stew in baby oil than apply moisturizer. He lounged like a pasha, a lord of the manor, while she was just a scullery maid used for diaper cleanings and sexual release. Robert bothered her less and less as time went on, though. But there was a terrible price to be paid for that, which was that nothing felt terrible at all, or good, or funny, or ironic, or deep. Or anything. I don't hate my husband. The thought blew like limp leaves through Helen's mind. And the price of that is I cannot love my son. Hey, babe, murmured Robert, poking his head around the doorframe. You been up for a while?
Yeah,
said Helen. There was a pause. Robert felt an impulse to show sympathy, but well, he didn't get sympathy for work difficulties, so why should she? You need any help? He asked. Helen shook her head. Robert watched as the rainbow slid over the part in her blonde hair. Helen watched his eyes. He did not glance at his son. She might as well have been holding a stuffed animal. Robert nodded. Well, brace yourself. This might get ugly. My mom filmed it, the monster.
Okay,
said Helen listlessly, and Robert felt the flash of anger that Helen refused to feel. Hey, he said, is it 3 scoops of coffee and 5 of water or the other way around?
It's been 3 years.
The anger didn't rouse itself. Robert's household incompetence was a force of nature not to be resisted without courting madness.
3 coffee, 5 water.
Robert paused in the doorway, obviously wanting the interaction to go better, and even more obviously resenting that it didn't. It's the right decision, babe, he said, gesturing at the multicolored prison. I mean, this... We can't go on. Helen stood up abruptly, clutching at her son like an insecure man forced to hold his wife's purse in a food court.
Yeah, I know. I'll make the coffee.
Robert grinned. With the baby, like a one-armed bandit. I need to shave and whatnot. I'll be down in a few. He blew his wife a kiss. His sudden bursts of selfish good humor also used to bother Helen. She made her way downstairs, her left bicep stiff and sore from constant baby holding. Justin dozed fitfully. His bassinet was in the living room next to the kitchen. She tried gently lowering him in, but his eyes blew open and his fingers clutched at her hair.
Always with the hair, thought Helen dully. He never cuddles. He just clutches and grabs and pulls.
She viewed her baby as a machine of need, which made her a machine of provision, like a robot feeder or the tall bottles that drip water for hamsters. Sitting with Justin was ungodly boring. He clutched at everything and squirmed constantly, if understimulated. So Helen had to carry him around the room, showing him paintings and books and appliances to the point where she felt like an empty, resentful airplane flying His Majesty from distraction to distraction. So here we open the drawer to get the coffee filters, Helen murmured. She read once that talking to your baby about what you were doing was good for him. It was likely nonsense like that Mozart music con. But she continued because any voice was better than silence and endless crying. She resented the fact that Justin rarely looked at what she was doing. He just stared at her face. Never quite at her eyes, though. Her mother was convinced that he was staring into the twin voids of her nostrils, searching for her soul. Judging and finding wanting, said her long-gone childhood friend in her mind. How is his nibs this AM? Said Robert energetically. His nibs was a nickname that Justin had earned by half-chewing Helen's nipples off whenever he breastfed. Nibs was short for nibbles, of course. Robert enjoyed the aristocratic tone. Helen did not. She also did not appreciate Robert humming the theme from Jaws whenever she unbuttoned her nursing bra. What do you do when everything about someone bothers you? Shut up about it, came her mother's voice. What, you don't think he has his complaints? Her mother's philosophy of marriage was that you didn't love it. You didn't fight it. You just put up with it. Putting up with it meant closing your mouth. If a man knew you were upset, you failed as a wife. Master the tight smile, submit, and keep him dumb, domesticated, and happy. Fired up at home, he'll lose out at work, and then where will you be? Living under a bridge, that's where. Homelessness figured prominently in all her mother's calculations. A family was always just one frown, or missed payment, or denied affection from trying to keep babies warm by holding them over steaming street vents. And for some reason, Helen had no fight left in her. It had traveled through her umbilical to Justin, who seemed to fight her on everything. Helen, said Robert, faintly aggrieved at not being answered. Oh, he's good, said Helen. How was your sleep? Good. Great, grinned her husband, unaware that his wife asked that question only to confirm that he'd never asked it back. Robert strode forward and patted her arm in passing. He yanked the carafe off the coffee maker without checking to see if it was finished brewing, leaving a trail of brown liquid. Even as recently as a month ago, Helen would have cried out in frustration and anger. Now, she faintly welcomed the mess. Gives me something to do later. Robert glanced over his shoulder. Are you still doing a cup a day?
I am. Yes. Why is this still a mystery?
Ah, well, I spent my youth being incandescent. I can spend a few years being utterly invisible. Robert poured her a steaming cup and held it out to her.
I'm holding the baby, Robert, said Helen evenly.
A box of rat poison flew through her mind. Yeah, sorry, said Robert, putting the coffee cup on a hand towel. Helen watched the coffee dripping down the sides, onto the white fabric, like brown blood. So, he said, what do we need to do to get ready?
I packed during the night. We're good.
That's great. Good job. Is there anything I need to do?
What do you mean?
Robert blinked. Well, is there anything that I... For... Helen sighed.
Just do what you need to do for work.
Robert paused.
Do you really need me to come? I mean, I'm happy to. I want to. But Peter wants me to meet with a client at 9:30 and I need to go over the case files. I can do it, but it would be crazy tight.
Helen stared at him.
When did he tell you?
When? Oh, Lord, you know him as I was leaving.
Last night?
Yeah. Look, it slipped my mind. I just remembered checking emails this morning.
Helen felt a vague impulse to insist that Robert show her the email. But why?
What was the point? If you think someone is lying to you, why bother checking up on them? It never ends because they just change strategies. Helen pursed her lips, shifting a complaining Justin from one arm to another.
I'd like for you to be there, she said.
Robert stared at her. He suddenly leaned forward, kissing her cheek and brushing her hair with his free hand. You're beautiful day and night, babe.
So you're coming?
Yeah. Of course. If you need it, me, I'm there.
So passive, thought Helen, again without anger. Why try to get out of coming if you're going to come anyway?
Her mother's answer came. To be magnanimous, of course. Let him have his little trophies.
Yeah, yeah, or we'll end up living under a bridge.
Her mother's voice joined hers at the end. Robert straightened up. How long do you need?
We have to be in the car in 5.
Okay, said Robert, as if she had surprised him unjustly.
You can keep 13 client files organized in your mind, but you never know when we have to leave.
Robert finished wrestling Justin into the car seat. Helen was often trapped at home because Justin simply refused to let her strap him in and slid in beside him. Justin also refused to sit in the back seat alone. You know, said Robert, I was just reading the other day that for every infant life saved by car seats, like hundreds of babies weren't born because 3 kids means you have to upgrade the car. He paused.
Crazy.
Yeah, Justin, that's right. Daddy's making conversation, but Mommy is focusing on driving, which is a good thing. Safety first, right, bud? Oh, crap. Robert's phone buzzed and he answered it. Hey, Pete. Peter, sorry. Yeah, just dealing with the spawn this AM. She's good. Peter says hi. I'll get on that. Yes. I know, you're right. He doesn't pay the bills. Jesus, it's like a sauna in here. Helen, can you up the AC? Sorry. Yes, I will. Thanks. Okay. Peter's tinny voice vanished, and Robert folded his phone. Safety first, babe, but can we step on it a bit? Peter's having a minor conniption. They arrived at the daycare and had to spend 8 sweaty minutes looking for parking. Twice they hovered like vultures over a minivan spilling over with kid toys before being waved away by impatient mothers in Lululemon leggings. Once they turned into a parking space only to be blocked by a moped. What the hell is a moped doing in a daycare parking lot? Snarled Robert, pulling at his collar. Helen had recently won the starch battle, so his neck was red.
Employee, I guess, murmured Helen.
Yeah. Almost there, buddy. Mommy's doing her best. Justin cried when Robert pulled him out of the car seat. His left arm got tangled in a strap, and as his father yanked, Helen was suddenly reminded of watching Robert half lose his mind untangling Christmas tree lights. Robert, she cried, will you do it then?
I can't. He only wants you.
Robert blew through his lips the sentence of blame, falling to mist with his spittle. Come on, buddy, work with me here. The dreaded pause of inhalation half froze Robert's blood as Justin gathered for a good old scream.
My God, he's like a pufferfish.
Is his arm red? Asked Helen. Surprised and resentful glances from other mothers washed over her as they tried to comprehend why a hooker slash mistress was involved in dropping off a man's kids. No, God, it's fine. Robert's face was red with rage against the ordinary impediments of an average life. No binkies, cried Helen as Robert jammed a pacifier into Justin's mouth. Well, we can't hand him over screaming, Helen. Some old fire flashed up. So what, we just yank it out like the pin of a grenade, hand him over and run? Well, if you... Robert obviously bit his lip, perhaps in the hope that Helen would finish that sentence in the most self-destructive way possible. Helen cocked her head. She would never be accepted by the other moms anyway, so why not cause a scene?
What, Robert?
Not the time, he muttered, stroking his son's hair so hard that his little chin jerked back and forth.
Oh, you mean if Justin liked me more, he could stay home?
Helen's voice was even, restrained, but with a clear signal that roof-blowing escalation was just one misplaced syllable away. Robert glanced around and ducked his head.
I didn't say that. Oh, such a lawyer,
spat Helen. Yeah, it's on the card. Robert leaned forward dangerously. It's what's paying for daycare, kiddo, because I can't pay someone else to do my job. Helen's face turned white.
Oh, man. Oh, dear. You didn't just say that. You know that I know a lot of lawyers, right?
I'm... Hey, sorry. I'm sorry.
Now we're all upset. You're not the goddamned weather, Robert. You make choices.
I did. I do. Bad choice. I'm sorry. Helen took a deep breath.
I don't think you can take that back.
The mask came off, Robert. It was terrible. You're a great mother. He's just going through a daddy phase. Robert tried to take her arm.
Look, it will pass. I promise you.
Her lips curled.
You're just appeasing me because you have to get to work.
No, I promise you.
A single older father carrying two baby bassinets glanced at Robert with sympathy. How's that hot, crazy matrix working out for you, bud?
I mean, I do have to get to work, of course.
Robert trailed off helplessly.
What do you want me to do? Just be something different.
Robert single-handedly pulled out his notebook and pen from his jacket pocket, flipped it open, and started writing. Okay, got it. Nice and detailed. Be different.
Yep.
Helen's nails itched to scratch him to the bone. They glared at each other, one on the sidewalk, one by the car. The sun too bright for their eyes, the truth too bright for their souls. Justin screamed, his tender mind torn by tensions far beyond his senses. Robert held out his hand.
Come on, babe. We can talk about this later. We've got to get him in, he finished urgently.
Suddenly, Helen had a flash of a day without either Robert or Justin. A hot bath, maybe doing her nails, some stretching, a yoga video, cyber-stalking old flames, old friends, finding out if she looked better and so feeling better. A nap. 5 naps.
You're right, she said.
She stepped forward and Justin screamed even louder.
Don't worry, kid. Mean old mama isn't going to rip you from daddy's precious arms.
Inside, a middle-aged woman with scraggly brown hair smiled broadly as they entered. Names, medical details, and paperwork were all checked. Both Robert and Helen wondered if the woman was deaf. She didn't even seem to hear their screaming infant.
So often the same, she said gently. They complain and complain, but they're always fine.
Yeah,
said Helen uncertainly, realizing she had to raise her voice over her son's volume.
It feels strange to drop him off in this state.
Oh, that just means he loves you, right, dear?
She touched Justin's cheek, and he recoiled from the faint odor of foreign spices. The woman's face hardened almost imperceptibly.
So he'll learn. We're not so different.
She stood up suddenly.
Now you must go. Dragging it out always makes it worse. Don't torture him, okay?
Okay,
said Helen, struck by a sudden internal tearing near her heart. Robert stuck out his hand. The woman shook it. As they turned to go, Justin screamed even louder. He rocked back and forth in his bassinet, striving mightily to spill out.
My God, he thinks we're never coming back,
whispered Helen uselessly. No one, not even herself, could hear her. The woman rose, suddenly so decisive it was almost threatening. Now, please, leave. The longer he cries, the harder he is to settle. You must trust us.
And so the couple fled the scene out into the parking lot, away from the screams of their baby, and leaned against the car, nauseous under the rising hot sun.